Hi, I'm Renee Summerauer, digital news anchor here at 7@7. Watch our streaming nonstop newscast immediately with your mobile phone. 7@7 is the new way for you to get every bit of local news you need in just 7 minutes. Breaking news, local neighborhood news, weather, and sports are just a click away. Reporters bring you all of what's happening in the Valley. From Roku, Amazon Fire, Apple TV, YouTube, and more. Get every bit of local news you need from the RJ and LVRJ.com.
You're listening to Vegas Nation. It's Monday, which means it's time for First and 10 with your hosts, Vinny Bonsignor and Sam Gordon.
What is good, Raider Nation? Have you survived the weekend? What a weekend it was. The NFL draft is in the books. The Raiders draft class is in the books. We can officially talk about who the silver and black drafted, what that roster looks like. Before we go any further, of course, you're in Vegas Nation. First and 10, your Monday go-to for Raiders news and analysis. Brought to you by the Las Vegas Review-Journal and presented by Blue Wire. Without further ado, I'd like to bring in our great co-host, Sam Gordon, my teammate over at the Las Vegas Review-Journal, Vegas Nation, VegasNation.com. You can follow all of his stuff fresh off of a whole week, I think it was, in Cleveland, Ohio, taking in all the sights and sounds. Sam, how are you doing, my brother?
Vinny, I'm doing well, man. I survived. Like you said, it was a full week in Cleveland, but really cool to be a part of, that experience and to see the optimism, not just with every fan base and their team and the players that they're drafting. You know, that's obviously speaks for itself, but it's an event. It's a live event with people, and it went off without a hitch. And that, to me, the bigger picture is the optimism about navigating this pandemic and getting closer to a football season in which we hopefully can have full stadiums and full crowds and get back to some semblance of normal. So that was cool. And it was a heck of an experience out there off the banks of Lake Erie.
Yeah. And, getting right to it, obviously we want to talk about the Raiders. That's who we cover. Sam, I thought it was a solid weekend, to be honest with you. I thought that they filled major needs, obviously. You can quibble on, you know, where you had Alex Leatherwood, and I'm not saying you specifically, Sam, but everybody else, where you might have had Alex Leatherwood on your draft board. But obviously, he was the Raiders' top choice at 17 in terms of tackles. And so they grabbed the big Alabama tackle, left tackle, who will now play right tackle, start from day one, make no question about that, in the first round. And in the second round, I thought they hit the home run of their draft by being able to trade up to go get arguably the best safety in this draft, Trevor Moehrig, who we've been talking about extensively, Sam, in the months leading up to this draft, weeks leading up to this draft. They were able to get him and plug him in as their day one starter at free safety. So let's stop it right there. First two rounds, you get, if you're the Raiders, you get your starting right tackle, your starting free safety, obviously, and we all understand this. Now it has to, you know, they have to take it to the grass and prove that they're NFL worthy players. But at the very least, they were the Raiders anyway, were able to hit on two big needs with a couple of dudes that can play some serious football.
Yeah, no question about it. No question about it. We're talking about all American caliber players. Alex Leatherwood was a consensus All American in Alabama, a national champion, arguably the best run blocking, at least from what we saw at Alabama, the best run blocking tackle in the draft, and this comes from a winning program and is going to be, like you said, ready to plug and play day one. And you know, there was, of course, kind of the national reaction that it was a little bit of a surprise and second round, kind of caliber player. But at the end of the day, until we get out there on the field and like you said, see what he can do, I think it's way too soon to say that it was, you know, a reach. Yeah, maybe because you have got a little better value in theory, sure. But if this is their guy and he has a pedigree, it's not like he's, you know, it's not like they grabbed a seventh round player or somebody that was projected to be undrafted. This was a bona fide big part of their offensive line of the best program in the country. And the fact that this is who they wanted, it was a little, you know, they went against the grain a little bit, but like you said, they're going to plug and play him day one at right tackle. And we have talked for weeks, Vinny, we knew there was a glaring need there and they addressed their need. And then they addressed their other need around two, like you said, with arguably the best safety prospect in Trevon Moehrig. And I think, you know, and I'm not, this isn't, you know, a new point. I've seen it all over Twitter, and it was something that popped into my mind right away, and I'm sure yours too. But if you switched, if you flip these two, the draft position, nobody's complaining at all, right? I mean, we thought Trevon Merrick was going to go, you know, be the first safety taken. It was a little bit of a surprise that he wasn't, but you get two guys that you can plug and play. They're mature players that are experienced, that come from winning programs, that have track records, and that, I think, is a coup. Given what the Raiders needed and how they went about free agency, knowing that they needed to fill these two positions, they do what they have to do, and they get two starters to boot.
Yeah, no question about it. And the other part of that, Sam, is that, you know, was I a little bit surprised that it was Alex Leatherwood? Absolutely. You know, for my money, and it's just my own, you know, personal opinion up to the length that I was, depth that, you know, I was able to assess some of these guys. Darisaw, was the guy that I was looking at. Yep. At 17. Yep. You know, for the Raiders from Virginia Tech. But you know, part of what I do is checking in with people that I know in the NFL that do this for a living, and literally are running their own drafts for their own teams. And the consensus that I got anyway on Leatherwood was that he was absolutely had a first round grade for a lot of teams, and within NFL circles, let's put it that way. And so this notion that the Raiders could have waited on him and gotten him in the second round, just get that craziness out of your head. That was not happening. There was no way that Alex Leatherwood was going to be available at number 48. Could you have traded up potentially in the second round to go get him, or back into the first round? That's more what it would have taken. Yeah, but then you're talking about giving up even more assets to go get a guy that you just, in your mind, if you're the Raiders, that was your guy on your board. You can't, you know, you can't tell teams, you know, stick to your board. And then when they stick to their board, you know, retroactively, you know, lash out at them. The point being is that he wasn't going to be there in the second round. And the other argument as well, you could have traded down, you know, this isn't Madden, you know. Yeah. It's not just, you don't just press buttons and make a trade happen. A trade has to have two teams that are willing to make that deal. And the team that's trading up, let's say in this scenario, you know, they have to give up something of value. Otherwise, the risk of making a move like that and potentially losing out on your target becomes too big of a risk if you're not getting the kind of reward that you know you feel compensates for that risk. So it didn't happen. They weren't able to line up on a deal with somebody. It's not as easy as everyone makes it out to be. They're, you know, not if you, and look at it this way, Sam, who did move into the once after a certain point in the draft or in that first round, there weren't any trade ups to trade higher, you know, into for teams, let's say from 32 to 20. All yeah. Right. There weren't teams that were trading up except for the Bears, who made the move, but that was much earlier to go to 10 or what was it? 10 yeah. to draft their quarterback, Justin Fields. But after that, there were no trade ups. So it tells you how difficult that is and how presumptuous it is to think that that can just happen, you know, in the blink of an eye on a whim. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah, I'm with you. And, you know, the teams that, quote unquote, theoretically that, you know, could have traded up, like maybe they were just comfortable waiting until, you know, 28 or 29 or wherever they picked, that they had a plethora of guys that they wanted there that they could have drafted. Like you said, it takes two to tango. And listen, the Raiders did what they had to do. They took Alex Leatherwood. He was their guy. They felt comfortable taking him at 17. And, you know, Mike Mayock even addressed that. He knew there was going to be some criticism and he didn't care. And now we have to see how this thing plays out. But again, I want to go back to what he accomplished in college, Vinny. He was a unanimous All-American in 2020. We know that the SEC is the best conference in football, right? It has been for a long time. He's twice a first-team All-SEC pick. He won the Outland Trophy in 2020. He won the Jacobs Blocking Trophy in 2020. And he was a part of two national championship caliber teams, right? So 2017 and 2020. He won two national titles. This is a player that was a five-star recruit coming out of high school. He has the pedigree. Not only does he have the pedigree, he lived up to it in college, and now he's going to have the opportunity to play for the Raiders. And like you said, plug and play from day one, be their right tackle. He's a tremendous run blocker. And you know, while there is some room to improve in the pass blocking, He's 22. Like, he's going to improve. Like, that's what happens with young players more often than not. Whether or not they improve to the degree that NFL teams need them to, that remains to be seen. But there's work to do. He's going to develop a little bit. And we know the Raiders want to run the ball. And Mike Mayock even touched on that in his press conference. They have Josh Jacobs. They have Kenyon Drake. They want to run the football, and they feel like Alex Leatherwood gives them an opportunity to do so at a higher level. We'll see how it shakes out. I think we're going to know a lot more, obviously, in September, October, November. But this is a player that is accomplished, that has accolades to back up his talent, and now is going to have an opportunity to be a part of a young kind of rebuilding offensive line.
Yeah, and there's the last thing I'm going to say about that. You know, I know that, from an outside looking in, and I feel like this was a bit of, moving the goalpost. But initially, the criticism was on the player. And I think that the analytics crowd or the draft, observers crowd, once they realized, well, you know, actually, he was much higher on NFL boards than what you thought, wherever you had him on your board. Then it became, well, they didn't maximize the value of the pick. They could have traded down. What I would say to those who are making that argument, and, you know, maybe there was an opportunity. It sounds like they did their due diligence on trading down. It just didn't make sense. And so they stuck to their guns. But what I would say to those people that keep talking about maximizing value of the pick and the trading down and the trading ups and all that and collecting the, you know, they're looking at it in a vacuum. You go into one of those 32 rooms as the general manager and start making calls on draft night, when there's 15 minutes or however long to make that pick. I guess what I'm saying is it's easy to just say that. It's the execution of it and finding another team that's willing to move up and getting fair value for it. To just throw out that argument that, oh, you could have traded down is just, to me, completely lazy and like I said earlier, presumptuous, because you're assuming that there are trades that they could have made that they just didn't make. Why would they do that? If there were good trades and there was guarantees that they were still going to be able to get their man, why do you think any team wouldn't do that? It's the opposite of that. There weren't fair trade values coming in. And as a result, they stuck to 17 and made the pick. But that's all I'm going to say. It's easy to sit there and just assume. You get in there in the war room and go find a team quickly and make a trade that makes sense and don't lose out on your guy. It's not as easy as you think. Okay, so in the second round, the opposite kind of happened. The Raiders sitting at 48 and watching the draft unfold. And frankly, I was a little bit surprised. We both had Trevor. We always talked about Moreg as a potential first round pick, and the Raiders thought that enough that they actually contemplating trading back up into the first round to get him. They were patient and they waited until he fell into an area where it made sense for them, striking distance, I should say, where the give up to go up to go get him was. Acceptable for them to go get a player that they really want. That happened, but also what really happened too is that two safeties came off the board within the first eight picks of the second round, which, all right, now there's a chance that, you know, if you're the Raiders or anybody else, could really lose out on a player here because somebody's going to take Trevor Moore. And the Dallas Cowboys were, by the way, and the Raiders, shrewdly said, you know what, we're not going to let that happen. We need to go get this guy. And they traded up five spots up to the 43rd pick to pick Trevor Moreg. I thought it was, very bold by the Raiders and also assertive by the Raiders to go get a guy that everyone, thinks is the best safety in this draft. He had a little bit of a minor back issue that seems to be behind him, no pun intended. And the Raiders signed off on it. Their medical guys, signed off on it. Your thoughts on just how that all played out and the player that they were able to get?
Yeah, I think that was, like you said, the kind of the highlight of the Raiders draft. You get a guy that, many draft analysts, many experts thought was going to, a top 20 kind of player in his draft, top 20 prospect, guy that at TCU was one of the best defensive backs in the country, can can cover, thrives in coverage, can make plays at the ball, can break up passes, can also fly down and make tackles around the line of scrimmage. A very, very kind of complete safety, but really, really thrives. It would seem to be a fit in Gus Bradley's cover three scheme. And the fact that they're able to get this guy, I mean, he's big at 6'2". He's rangy. He can move. He's fluid. And he played in the Big 12. And what do they do in the Big 12? They throw the ball all the time. Every team just throws a zillion times a game. That's not a conference known, you know, for its conservative running games. I'll tell you that. So he's seen all different kinds of offenses, all different kind of coverage schemes he's familiar with. And to me, feels like the exact kind of player that Gus Bradley and his staff, Ron Miles, can develop and mold into the ideal safety for the Raiders cover three scheme. So the fact that they were able to get him at 43, like you said, I respect going up and getting him. Like you mentioned, we know Dallas is in need of a secondary and defensive backs. They missed out on Patrick Surtain in the first round, so it made sense that they were going to go after a safety in the second round. And the Raiders were aware of that. Went up, did what they had to do. You parted ways with a little bit of your draft day depth, but you know what? Like, with all things considered, like, this team has enough young players, right? You want to add value in the draft and you want to add talent in the draft, but they didn't need I don't think they needed those later picks. I think it's well worth it to go up and get a guy who in the second round is going to be on a very team-friendly contract early on, and you know you're going to be able to plug, play, and develop in that secondary alongside a young group that the team needs to take a step forward next year. So he to me is the kind of the Raiders home run of this draft, and looking forward to see what he brings to that section.
Your time is valuable, so we've built a 7-minute nonstop newscast that fits into your daily routine. I'm Jen Ah. 7 at 7 keeps you informed anytime, anywhere. Look for top stories, weather, sports and sports betting, business, lifestyle, and entertainment. Get every bit of local news you need in 7 minutes. Watch 7 at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. streaming nonstop 24/7 from the Las Vegas Review-Journal on your mobile or smart TV.
Yeah, and by the way, the Raiders were able to you know, get their guy, and that's the key to the whole thing. And you know, in talking to Trevon Moehrig, really impressed with his presence and very articulate. Just seems to have a presence about him that I think on a very young secondary is going to fit really well. Yes, he's coming in as a rookie aside some veterans, but we use the term veterans in that secondary fairly loosely, and it's relative, to be honest with you, because these are very young players. You know, experience-wise, age-wise, he actually kind of fits right in into that age group. So, I don't think that it's going to take very long for him to kind of take command of that defense as the quarterback of the secondary, I should say. And I don't think there's going to be any grumbling or, you know, from the people around him, from the his contemporaries now. I think that this secondary understands it needs leadership. And I think his presence, Jonathan Abrams kind of, you know, moving on into year three of his career, Damon Arnette going into his second year, Trevon Mullen going into his second year. I think he comes into a really good situation and is going to lend some leadership to that group. And I think that you're going to see that really early on in his career. So they go to the third round, and a couple of interesting players, right back to back. They had the 79th and 80th picks. 79 is Malcolm Kuntz, defensive end, pass rusher, if you will, from Buffalo. And then at 80, and I love this name, man. I love it. Divine Diablo. The safety who's now going to play linebacker from Virginia Tech. Before we get into that analysis, I got a text late Saturday night, and basically it was from another team's general manager, and he was like, you know, it was kind of half kiddingly sort of pissed off because he was like, loved those two guys, you know, like he basically said, you know, those are two of my favorite players in this draft. And so they were obviously targets for that team as well. But the Raiders were able to get two players that in NFL circles were really highly valued in and around that area. And very quickly, if you watch Kuntz, I'm sure you have, the dude has a knack, man. He has an elite, and I'm not using that lightly. he has an elite pass rush skill. There's layers to his, you know, what he does coming off the edge that is going to be able to fit in a rotational basis. Like right now, you can see on film, it's going to translate to the NFL. And I think if they use him strategically, which I believe that they will, and get him on the field in situations that he can excel, I think he's going to have an impact pretty early on.
Yeah, 14 sacks in 19 games the last 2 years. So he has a production to back it up. And, you know, I'm not gonna sit here and act like I was an expert on Malcolm Kuhns before the pick, Vinny. But like you said, watching him play, you see the athleticism, you see the upside, right? You see the potential that he has. And, you know, as we kind of talked about leading into the draft, like you have a couple needs, you fill those needs, and now it's kind of time to build out some depth. And I think that's what the Raiders were able to do with these picks. You add to that, there was clearly an investment made in that defensive line and bolstering. That defensive line bolstering that pass rush, and now you get another prospect that has the potential to do that. Like you said, to be a rotational player, to come in where there's not going to be a lot of pressure on him right away because of the names in front of him, where he can kind of adjust to the NFL level and, like you said, figure out how to apply his unique ability to get after the passer into the team's defensive scheme. So there's definitely some upside there, and I think it's again, you can never have enough pass rushers, and if they believe Malcolm Kuhns is a capable pass rusher that can go get after the quarterback, then you add another one to your stable of what should be a better defensive line. And then, like you touched on with Divine Diablo, does that feel a little Cam Chancellor-ish to you? You know, a bigger safety that's going to play closer to the line of scrimmage, like you said, linebacker. I mean, we know Gus Bradley's familiar with Cam Chancellor there. What was your read on that pick and how that came into fruition?
Yeah, and he's a player that I had been watching, leading up to the draft. And, you know, the question that I had was the safety, part of that, you know, and is he a safety? Is he a linebacker? Well, you know, the Raiders made it pretty clear that he is going to play linebacker. And when you look at him from that perspective, he's really intriguing. First of all, for his size, he could run. And I was watching a bunch of footage of him last night. And his range, being able to turn and run in coverage. And a lot of times, you know, in what I was watching, he was lined up, you know, close to the line of scrimmage, kind of like what he's going to be used here with the Raiders, and being able to really flash that athletic ability at his size. He's a big football player. He's 6'3". 230-ish,
yeah,
and can run. I think the only reason that he lasted to the third round was because of that, you know, he's going to be making a little bit of a transition, you know, position transition, but it's clearly a Gus Bradley kind of a draft pick. And you mentioned the name Cam Chancellor, and I agree with you there. And I think this whole defensive draft, to be honest with you, really had a lot of Gus Bradley written all over it. Guys like Kuhns, who to me, when you watch him play, I don't want to put too much pressure on the kid at all. But he's kind of got a Melvin Ingram feel to him. I'm not saying that he's Melvin Ingram. Let's not, go too far. But his ability to really get after the quarterback and his body type really feels like a Melvin Ingram. Now he's got to be an every down player. He's got to, work on his run game and all that, and that'll come. But right now, like day one, he should be able to get on the field just as a situational pass rusher to get heat on the quarterback. And then, you know, Diablo is a guy that really fits Gus Bradley's kind of MO. You know, you take athletes, you take players that, you know, yes, maybe you might move them, from a safety to a linebacker in college. But he's got such a good track record that you feel confident that's going to happen. And I keep stressing this as well, Sam. A couple of names to remember: Ron Miles, the new secondary coach, and Richard Smith, the new linebacker coach. Both of these guys have track records in this. And we're going to get to Miles in just a second. He's going to have a big influence on Trevor Moehrig, and I think a huge influence on Nate Hobbs, who they were able to pick up in the fifth round, I believe it was, and Tyree Gillespie, the kid from the safety from Missouri. But we'll get to that in just a second. I think Diablo in Richard Smith's hands and with Gus Bradley kind of commanding that whole thing has a chance to be a productive player sooner rather than later.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Like you touched on, he has the physical measurables. He has the traits. He has the experience playing at a big time program at Virginia Tech. And it's, you know, like you said, these guys have been there and done that. They understand how to develop guys and how to put guys, how to help ease that transition for players and put them in roles where they can be successful. And that's, I think, what you're going to see is what's going to happen with Diablo and then obviously Kuntz as well. Now, with that said, like we touched on, this was a defensive heavy draft, defense, defense, defense. I even tweeted that out as you were tweeting the picks along, defense, defense, defense. A great job, by the way, Vin. You were all over all these draft picks. You were on top of everything that was happening. What did you make of Tyree Gillespie? Because now you've added multiple safeties, multiple defensive backs in this draft. What did you think? What do you think his addition means for this defense, or means for special teams, or both?
Well, the guy can play it, number one. And you know, we need to preface all this by saying, look, it's all going to happen on the grass. That's where right. all is going to come together. And so all we really can do right now is, you know, try to. And this is what I try to say is. You want to be able to, does it make sense? Did the pick make sense? Did you, you know, crazy overreach, or did you draft a punter in the second, you know, sort of that. Everything else is just, you know, are these guys going to be able to, do you feel like they fit? And then everything else has to take care of itself. And that's on the player, that's on the coaching staff, development, all that kind of stuff. But in terms of Tyree Gillespie, who the Raiders traded back up into the fourth round, to go get, because they felt like, you know, just too good not to trade up to go get. I think that he brings, first of all, you know, did they put Jonathan Abram on notice? Yeah. I wrote that a little bit. I think, everybody's on notice in the NFL. Your replacement is always, the next wave is always coming, you know? And so you always have to compete for your job and you compete for your place. So I think that, you know, his presence definitely, not that it needed to, because I think Jonathan Abram is highly motivated, you know, to get things turned around. And I actually think that he's in a pretty good position now that he's going to be used in a certain way. And we need to get into that real quick. The presence of Trevon Moehrig as the free safety center fielder, if you want, allows Jonathan Abram to go do what he does best as a box safety close to the line of scrimmage, where, you know, he can excel in the run game, and his pass defense is managed in a much better way. Rather than have him defending, you know, large portions of the field, which frankly, that's not his strength. You know, playing as a box safety, he's going to be able to cover a zone area that's much, much, you know, just reduced. The space is reduced, and I think that's going to help him, and it's going to help kind of unlock him. Now, it's up to him. You know, it's on him, basically, and he's at a crossroads. There's no question about it. But if that settles him down, he's in a good position to really move forward as a player. If not, here comes Tyree Gillespie, who, at the very least, and if you look at the NFL nowadays, there's a lot of three safety sets in the NFL. You're trying to get athletes that can run and hit and cover, you know, on the field as much as possible, given what the direction that offenses are going in. So he kind of profiles as that box safety. He could also, he has versatility to play free safety. But I think that he's got a chance to work himself into a rotational basis. It might not happen right away. But I think as time goes on, he's going to start seeing the field. And Sam, I got to say this real quick. When I was covering the Rams from 2019 to 2020, I wasn't there in 2020, but 2019 to 2020, they drafted four safeties and they added another in undrafted free agency. So in the course of two drafts and, you know, UDFAs, they added five safeties. They had already had John Johnson, you know, in the mix, but they understood A, where football is going, how important safeties are, also the physicality of that position. You need depth because guys get hurt. You're running, flying around the field in run support, in pass coverage. It's a highly volatile position, and the more the better. So, and every one of those guys, those five safeties from 2019 to 2020, Sam, got on the field. And they weren't all first round picks at all. In fact, they were more your third round picks, fourth round picks, sixth round picks, undrafted free agents, and that they all got on the field. So, you know, I've seen some like, wow, why would the Raiders double dip at safety? Even Diablo played a little safety. Hey, man, the more, the better. This is where the NFL is going. And if the Rams are any kind of a, you know, if you want to take a page out of a team's draft guide, and they've done it really well, it makes sense. And generally speaking, guys are going to get on the field pretty early in their careers.
Yeah, okay, first off, who's ever complained about having like too much depth in the NFL? Like, you can never have too much depth. And we saw that based on how the season played out in 2020 with the Raiders, how they didn't have a ton of depth defensively, or, you know, high top end kind of difference making players to begin with. So you get the players and then you figure it out, right? You acquire the talent, then you figure out the ways in which to best use these guys. And it doesn't, like you said, it doesn't have to be day one. Like, it's okay for guys to develop. It's okay for guys to play on special teams or contribute in this way year one, and then maybe get a little bit bigger role in year two as you adjust to the NFL, as you adjust to NFL coaching, NFL schemes, and as you improve as a player. So I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I mean, I think that we knew that the Raiders had defensive concerns, and they addressed the defense in this draft. And you can figure it out. They went out and got, like you said, talented players, athletes that fit the mold of the modern game. Now it's on the coaching staff, and like you said, on the players to develop and grow within Gus Bradley's scheme. But it totally makes it to me. I didn't bat an eyelash. I mean, they need defensive backs, they need safeties, they need guys that can contribute in a number of ways. And going after Gillespie and even Nate Hobbs in the fifth round, the cornerback, it's to me not a big deal at all. I don't think there were. I mean, who else are you going to take? You know, what other route are you going to go? You get more defensive backs, more guys that you can develop, and that's what the Raiders needed on that side of the ball.
Yeah, and keep in mind, we don't know as we sit here today who the heck's going to be the slot cornerback.
Yeah.
So you just mentioned Nate Hobbs, and I'm going to say this: all the guys that we talked to, and it was just on Zoom, granted. But you can get a feel for people pretty early on, and I do really like the presence and the demeanors of all the guys that the Raiders drafted, to be honest with you. But in particular, Nate Hobbs just kind of jumped off the computer Zoom screen with his, he's got a chip on his shoulder. He expressed that. Got not a great story, but like a compelling story on everything that he's had to kind of overcome to get where he's gotten. And he's just one of those dudes that you watch the film and he's tough as nails. He's got versatility. He can play inside, play outside. He doesn't lack for confidence whatsoever. Again, it has to happen on the field. But I think Nate Hobbs has a chance to at least compete for that slot cornerback job that was left vacated, you know, with the release of LaMarcus Joyner. Right now, Meek Robertson's in the mix for that. Nate Hobbs is going to be in the mix for that. I'm sure that the Raiders are probably going to add somebody through the last phase of free agency here. But Nate Hobbs, when you put on the tape, he plays with a toughness that's pretty obvious. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, if that's going to be able to translate and if he can find his way onto the field pretty early on.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you build out depth and you're creating competition, and who doesn't thrive from competition, right? Like the cream will rise to the top, right? That's what they like to say. So now you put guys in positions to compete for jobs and to compete for roles on this team, on a new defense. Yeah, you're bringing back some returning players, but I think the defense, based on what we saw free agency and what we've seen in the draft, is going to have, and with Gus Bradley, is going to have a whole different feel to it in 2021 than it did in 2020. Last thing draft related, what did you make of the seventh round pick taking the center out of Pitt?
Definitely one of those stories of the overachiever, right?
Yep,
walked on at Pitt, ended up becoming a 4-year starter like right off the bat. Team captain. I think the Raiders drafted a couple of team captains, and that doesn't, you know, don't over completely overlook that. Remember Connor Cook, I think it was the quarterback from Michigan, who his teammates didn't vote him, team captain. And it was kind of a big ado, and everyone's like, oh, he was like, no, it doesn't matter. Well, it mattered. I don't even think he's in the league anymore. So there was something up with that. So, you know, that's something to at least take into consideration. Now, granted, I think he's going to go into the Tom Cable offensive line lab for the next at least year or so. And you see what you're going to get, in a couple of years, what you have in Jimmy Morrissey, which I love the name, by the way. Right now, the Raiders, you know, are pretty set at center with Andre James and Nick Martin. Whoever wins that job, obviously, is the center. Whoever loses it, it's going to be a, kind of a swing center, kind of a guard, kind of a player. I don't see that there's a whole lot of room for Jimmy, you know, on that 53-man roster. Of course, that could all change. But I think he's a guy that probably at the end of the day projects as a, you know, maybe a guy that you put on the practice squad for the next couple of years, or at least this year, and see what you got a year from now, and if he's going to be able to help.
Yeah, for sure. And there's no pressure. I mean, you don't necessarily you don't expect guys in the seventh round to come in and be contributors. If they do, you know, great. And if not, like you said, maybe there's a room for an opportunity for him to develop on the practice squad. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. You move on. He's a seventh round pick. Not a ton of draft capital invested there, but you know, it's worth taking a flyer on another offensive lineman. This is going to be a, you know, we talk about the defensive line and the new defense that with all these components put in place. But I think one of the underlying storylines is how is this offensive line going to take shape moving forward with Alex, you know, now with Alex Leatherwood, with Colt Miller locked in, with Andre James, like you said, with Nick Martin, with Richie Incognito coming back. It's going to be a very, very different unit in 2021 than it was for the most part in 2020. So very interested to see kind of how that develops and how that storyline takes shape as we get closer to the season. Like you said, it all happens on the grass. It all plays out. It will all play itself out on the field in training camp and OTAs. And then more importantly, during the 2021 season, which really, Vinny, like, we're not that far off. It's weird, right? It's already May. Like, we're only a couple months away from training camp.
And we love it. We love that.
Yeah, we do.
We absolutely love that. Even though many of us struggled, not struggled, but once we crossed the finish line, basically yesterday, it felt kind of good to just take a deep breath. I'm sure, every team feels that same exact kind of exhaustion slash exhilaration slash, okay, now it's time to look ahead. And I can assure you right now, the Raiders are looking ahead. They're probably, what time is it? 9:16. They're probably on a team Zoom call, doing the virtual OTAs right now. And, you know, getting after it and getting ready for next year. And of course we're going to be here every step of the way, covering, that journey. But, the roster looks way more complete today, than it did a month ago. And to all the fans who were freaking out, what about right tackle? What about free safety? And we kept saying, it's April. They don't have to play a game tomorrow. They have a plan. There's a plan in place. And I thought we saw that plan executed fairly well over the weekend, Sam. And now Raider fans can rest easy. They have a right tackle. They've got a free safety. We all expected that. It actually came to fruition. And now can't wait, Sam, to see it all out on the grass.
No doubt. No doubt. And, you know, I know there's always kind of a rush to assign, you know, grades and instant reaction. And obviously we should spend 35 minutes giving our thoughts, but we're going to see how this thing plays out. Like you said, on the grass, we're going to see, you know, how these guys develop, how they're able to contribute, how they're able to impact this team day one, and not just day one, but in day one, year two. I think a lot of these things you don't know until 2-3 years down the road. Some guys pop right away and you know that they were great draft picks, but other guys, they take more time. It takes more time to develop. And I say that to say, let's not rush to judgment about, you know, any of these players yet. Let's see how these things play out. Let's see how they develop and grow and how they're able to contribute to the Raiders, not just this year, but in the years beyond that as well.
Absolutely. Sam, thanks so much. I'm glad that you got back safe and sound along with Heidi, our great teammate at the Las Vegas Review Journal. Take a little breather, take a little bit of a break, because it's going to get hot and heavy here pretty soon.
Oh, man.
It's going to be here sooner than you think. Thanks to our great producer, Larry Muir, for always being flexible. Thank you guys thanks to the fans and the listeners. You guys, whether you're reading our stuff or downloading, you know, the podcast, the numbers have been astronomical. And it's a great thank you to you guys for participating and engaging and clicking and doing everything that you do. We've got you covered, and we appreciate doing it. Talk to you guys next week. Enjoy the rest of the week and enjoy digging into all the film on all the newest Raiders. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Look for 7@7, local streaming news from the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Find it on your smartphone at the RJ app, or it's available on Roku TV, Fire TV, and Apple TV. Download the app and you're ready to go for 7@7.